Last time we talked about Jesus' second rejection, he went back to Nazareth and he had the sending off of the 12. We talked about that and how they were going to go off and do some preaching, do some healing, some miracles, and spread the word. We read through Matthew's account of that. We didn't get a chance to read Mark's or Luke's, so let's go ahead and start by doing that. Again, the sending off of the 12. Mark chapter 6. Some of this plays in today's class a little bit when they come back and so forth. Mark chapter 6 and begin at verse 7. And he called the 12 to himself and began to send them out two by two, and gave them power over unclean spirits. He commanded them to take nothing for the journey except a staff, no bag, no bread, no copper in their money belts, but to wear sandals and to not put it on two tunics. And he said to them, in whatever place you enter a house, stay there till you depart from that place. And whoever will not receive you nor hear you, when you depart from there, shake off the dust under your feet as a testimony against them. Now surely I say to you, it will be more tolerable for Sodom and Gomorrah in the day of judgment than for that city. And so they went out and preached that people should repent. And they cast out many demons and anointed with oil many who were sick and healed them. Luke chapter 9. Verse 1 begin. Luke 9, verse 1. He called his 12 disciples together and gave them power and authority over all demons and to cure diseases. He sent them to preach the kingdom of God and to heal the sick. And he said to them, take nothing for the journey, neither staffs, nor bag, nor bread, nor money, and do not have two tunics apiece. Whatever house you enter, stay there, and from there depart. And whoever will not receive you, when you go out of that city, shake off the very dust from your feet as a testimony against them. And so they departed through the towns, preaching the gospel and healing everywhere. Any comments about that section? Next, we have the death of John the Baptist. This is found in Matthew and Mark and Luke. We're going to find that news about Jesus has been spreading throughout Judea, and so it's not surprising that word of Jesus eventually reaches the rulers, in this case Herod. And when Herod hears of Jesus and the miracles that he's performing, Herod was certain that John had risen from the grave. So we find out that John is already dead. He's certain that John had risen from the grave to haunt him. Others were telling him that Jesus was Elijah, or one of the other prophets, arisen from the grave. Possibly even the prophet that's mentioned by Moses. Let's turn to Deuteronomy 18, verse 18. We keep on hearing about this saying the prophet. Deuteronomy, verse 18. Verse 18. Let's start at 17. The Lord said to me, what they have spoken is good. I will raise up for them a prophet like you from among their brethren, and will put my words in his mouth, and he shall speak to them all that I command him. So this is one we hear about. Herod knew John was dead. He had put to death. But still he was curious to meet this Jesus he keeps on hearing so much about. Herod is referred to as a tetrarch, not a monarch, because his father, Herod the Great, we talked about before, had divided his realm into four areas. And that's that word for tetrarch. His four surviving sons had ruled. This Herod's name was Antipas. He took on the title Herod when he inherited his realm. John had been in prison because Herodias, who was Herod's wife, was offended when John stated that her marriage to Herod was not a legal one. He couldn't do that. Couldn't have her as his wife. Antipas had married his half-brother Philip's wife, who was herself a daughter of Bernice and Philip's half-brother Aristobulus. So in other words, Herodias had married her uncle. Philip had been disinherited by Herod the Great, and was living in Rome. This is from history. On a visit to Rome, Antipas ran off with Philip's wife and his niece. And according to history, Herod Antipas' own wife was the daughter of Aretas, who was king of Arabia. But he prevailed on Herodias, his half-brother Philip's wife, to forsake her husband and live with him on condition. This comes from Josephus. On the condition that he should put his own wife away. And this involved him afterwards in this war of Aretas. or with Aretas, who totally defeated him and destroyed his army from the effects he was never able to recover. Again, that's from history. That's who this person is. So what John had declared is clearly taught in the Old Testament, that a man is not allowed to marry his brother's wife. Let's turn to Leviticus. Again, he's telling you can't have your brother's wife, and that was it from the law. Leviticus 18, verse 16. We'll look at two verses here. First one is here, 16. You shall not uncover the nakedness of your brother's wife. It is your brother's nakedness. And over in Leviticus chapter 20, and verse 21. If a man takes his brother's wife, it is an unclean thing. He has uncovered his brother's nakedness, and they shall be childless. So he was just telling the law. Herod himself, when he was told this, was initially angry with John. He didn't like to hear these things. And he would have put him to death, but John's popularity with the people and the fact that the people held him to be a prophet caused him to stay his hand, so he didn't do it. The book of Mark reveals that Herod was also afraid of John. But as John remained in prison, Herod took time to talk with John. He enjoyed his discussions with him. He did many things for John, but he did not leave his sins. He wouldn't do that for John. Perhaps Herod thought to bribe John into acceptance of his marriage would work, but it didn't work. At some point, Herod had a birthday, we find, and a large party is held there for him. All the leading men from all Galilee are there in attendance. We see that Herodias' daughter, whom we know from history to be named Salome, performed a dance as part of the entertainment. Well, we can't know for sure. It's easy to speculate that there must have been drinking at the party, and Salome's dance was appealing because of the foolish response of Herod. He offered Salome anything she wanted, up to half his kingdom. This girl didn't know what to ask for, so she went to her mother. Mother asked her to ask for the head of John the Baptist. It seemed strange, but this girl rushed back to Herod, made the request her mother told her to make. She probably knew that if she waited until the guests had gone, that Herod probably would try to avoid it. The request grieved Herod because he, again, had come to respect John. He had known him for some time. However, he could not get out of the matter without breaking his word before these many noble people here, so he had to do it. He was in a tough position. Religiously, he had made a vow. It was rash. It was a vow. Politically, he wanted to be seen as a man of his word, unless those he dealt with would never trust him again. So he couldn't back out of this. But worse, he just didn't want to tell Salome no. He was a weak-willed ruler and a father. Small wonder that his country and family life was in constant turmoil according to history books. But understand this event helps us to see why he and other rulers of his time were willing to let Jesus be put to death, though he had done no wrong. The sad thing is that if Salome had asked for a part of his kingdom, he probably would have found a way to get out of that one. But here he gives John's head. Herod immediately had John beheaded and gave the girl what she wanted, and she in turn gave John's head to her mother. John's disciples heard of this misdeed. They claimed the body of John, and they gave him a decent burial. The disciples then sought out Jesus and told him what had happened. Matthew chapter 14. These accounts are some similar, but each of them tells us something a little different. Matthew 14, verse 1. At that time, Herod the Tetrarch heard the report about Jesus and said to his servants, "This is John the Baptist. He has risen from the dead, and therefore these powers are at work in him." For Herod had laid hold of John and bound him and put him in prison for the sake of Herodias, his brother Philip's wife, because John had said to him, "It is not lawful for you to have her." Although he wanted to put him to death, he feared the multitude because they counted him as a prophet. But when Herod's birthday was celebrated, the daughter of Herodias danced before them and pleased Herod. And therefore he promised with an oath to give her whatever she might ask. So she, having been prompted by her mother, said, "Give me John the Baptist's head here on a platter." And the king was sorry. Nevertheless, because of the oaths, because of those who sat with him, he commanded it to be given to her. And so he sent and had John beheaded in prison. His head was brought on a platter and given to the girl, and she brought it to her mother. Then his disciples came and took away the body and buried it, and went and told Jesus. Mark chapter 6. Verse 14 beginning. Now King Herod heard of him, for his name had become well known. So we see here how famous Jesus is becoming. And he said, John the Baptist has risen from the dead, and therefore these powers are at work in him. Others said it is Elijah. Others said it is the prophet, or like one of the prophets. But when Herod heard, he said, this is John, whom I beheaded. He has been raised from the dead. For Herod himself had sent and laid hold of John, bound him in prison for the sake of Herodias, his brother Philip's wife. And he had married her, because John had said to Herod, it is not lawful for you to have your brother's wife. Therefore Herodias held it against him and wanted to kill him, but she could not. For Herod feared John, knowing that he was a just and holy man, and he protected him. And when he heard him, he did many things, and heard him gladly. So he enjoyed his time with him. Then an opportune day came when Herod, on his birthday, gave a feast for his nobles and the high officers and the chief men of Galilee. When Herodias' daughter herself came in and danced and pleased Herod and those who sat with him, the king said to the girl, ask me whatever you want, and I will give it to you. And he also swore to her, whatever you ask me, I will give you up to half my kingdom. So she went out and said to her mother, what shall I ask? And she said, the head of John the Baptist. And immediately she came in with the haste to the king and asked, saying, I want you to give me at once the head of John the Baptist on a platter. And the king was exceedingly sorry. Yet because of the oaths and because of those who sat with him, he did not want to refuse her. Immediately the king sent an executioner, commanded his head be brought. He went and beheaded him in prison, brought his head on a platter, gave it to the girl. The girl gave it to her mother. When his disciples heard of it, they came and took away his corpse and laid it in a tomb. And Luke chapter 9. This is the shortest account of the three. Luke chapter 9, begin at verse 7. Now when Herod the Tetrarch heard of all that was done by him, and he was perplexed, because it was said by some that John had risen from the dead, and by some that Elijah had appeared, and by others that one of the old prophets had risen again, Herod said, John, I have beheaded, but who is this of whom I hear such things? And so he sought to see him. Any comments about that section? So next we have the feeding of the 5,000. What's unusual about this is it's in all four books. Actually, unusual happens sometimes. But don't forget that the 12 had been sent out. They were preaching. They were doing miracles. And now they've returned. So again, many in the events of Jesus' life are recorded in multiple accounts. We have only a few that are recorded in all four. And again, this is one of them. So as we discussed at the beginning, each account is targeted at a separate audience. Remember us talking about that. And the events selected were those that would be important for that particular audience to know. Matthew wanted his select audience and Mark and so forth. But this event is recorded in all four. So it's important for the Jews, Romans, for Greeks and Christians, all groups. John mentions that this event happened shortly before the Passover feast. And so we're approaching the end of Jesus' second year of preaching. Remember, he preaches for about 3 years. We kind of keep our timeline by this Passover when it happens. And so the Passover is shortly coming. The fact that the Passover is approaching also explains the crowds. People are traveling to Jerusalem. But hearing of Jesus, they are making a detour to see this man who they hear about so much, who teaches like no other and heals people of their diseases. The apostles that we mentioned had returned to Jesus after their journey through the region as they were doing their things. And they excitedly told Jesus all that had happened to them, what they had taught the people while they were gone. So Jesus suggests that they leave the crowds for a time, get some rest, take a little break. The bustle of the people was so great that no one even had time to eat, we find. Jesus leaves his current location by boat for a deserted mountainous area near the city of Bethsaida. So he's on a boat, trying to get away. But it must have been too far away because we find that the multitude he was trying to avoid had guessed where he was going, and they arrived there before he even got there. That's by foot. So from the description of their travels in the next lesson, it appears that the area was southeast of Bethsaida. And seeing their determination, recognizing how much that they needed Him, they needed guidance, Jesus again was moved by compassion, we're told, to teach them about the kingdom and to heal their sick. And so He does these things. Account of just the men shows that there were about 5,000 present. Of course, that doesn't include the women and children. The day passes by. As evening approaches, the disciples suggest to Jesus that they should send the crowds away so they can go search for food, so the people can go find their own food in certain villages in the area. But Jesus told the disciples that it wasn't necessary, that His disciples could feed them. And this seemed incredible to the disciples. It would take at least 200 days' wages or denarii to feed such a crowd. It's a large crowd. We're told that even then, everyone would only get a small amount of food. The thought of even buying and bringing back such a large quantity of food seemed daunting to them. They couldn't do it. So Jesus sent them to see how much food that they actually had there with them. Andrew, we're told, found 5 loaves of bread and 2 fish that a young boy had brought with him. But that was all the food for 5,000 plus people. And this wasn't even enough to feed them, the disciples. He told them to take a seat. He set them in groups. After blessing the food, He distributes the bread and the fish to the disciples, and they in turn go and distribute to the groups. After everyone has their fill, Jesus tells the disciples to gather what's left over. They discovered they had 12 baskets of food that was left over. And those fed were now certain that this prophet promised by Moses had come into the world. This is a big thing to them. The miracle that Jesus did is reminiscent of the miracle of 2 other things from the Old Testament. Let's look at these other miracles. Elijah does one in 1 Kings. First Kings chapter 17. This is the miracle of flour and oil. 1 Kings chapter 17 and verse 8. Then the word of the Lord came to him, saying, "Arise and go to Zarephath, which belongs to Sidon, and dwell there. See, I have commanded a widow there to provide for you." So he arose and went to Zarephath. When he came to the gate of the city, indeed a widow was there gathering sticks. And he called to her and said, "Please bring me a little drink in a cup that I may drink." And as she was going to get it, he called to her and said, "Please bring me a morsel of bread in your hand." It's a little bit of bread. And so she said, "As the Lord your God lives, I do not have bread, only a handful of flour in a bin and a little oil in a jar." So think of that, a handful of flour and only a little oil in a jar. "And see, I am gathering a couple of sticks that I may go in, prepare it for myself and my son, that we may eat it and die." In other words, that's how much she had. That was their last meal. Elijah said to her, "Do not fear. Go and do as you have said. But make me a small cake from it first, and bring it to me. And afterward, make some for yourself and your son. For thus says the Lord God of Israel, the bin of flour shall not be used up, nor shall the jar of oil run dry until the day the Lord sends rain on the earth." And so she went away and did according to the word of Elijah. And she and he and her household ate for many days. The bin of flour was not used up, nor did the jar of oil run dry, according to the word of the Lord, which he spoke by Elijah. And then over in 2 Kings chapter 4. This is the miracle of the oil by Elisha. Verse 1. A certain woman of the wives of the sons of the prophets cried out to Elisha, saying, "Your servant, my husband, is dead, and you know that your servant feared the Lord. And the creditor is coming to take my 2 sons to be his slaves." So Elisha said to her, "What shall I do for you? Tell me, what do you have in the house?" And she said, "Your maidservant has nothing in the house but a jar of oil." He said, "Go borrow vessels from everywhere, from all of your neighbors, empty vessels, and do not gather just a few." In other words, get a lot of them. "When you have come in, you shall shut the door behind you and your sons, then pour it into all those vessels and set aside the full ones." And so she went from him, shut the door behind her and her sons, who brought the vessels to her, and she poured it out. And it came to pass when the vessels were full that she said to her son, bring me another vessel. And he said to her, there is not another vessel. And so the oil ceased. She came and told the man of God, and he said, go sell the oil and pay your debt, and you and your sons live on the rest. So there's a lot of oil. But again, even though these two miracles are an example, the difference is the scale in which we're about to read about what was done and the number of witnesses to the event. Over 5,000 people saw this. The miracle, well, the event marks a pivotal point in Jesus' ministry. People now begin to seriously consider his claim to be Messiah. He is who he says he is. Some to follow him, but many to reject him as well because of his claims. Matthew chapter 14. And as you can imagine, these are similar in the readings, but we do learn a little bit different things from here and there. Matthew chapter 14, begin at verse 13. When Jesus heard it, again, he just heard that John the Baptist had died. He departed from there by the boat to a deserted place by himself. But when the multitudes heard it, they followed him on foot from the cities. When Jesus went out, he saw a great multitude, and he was moved with compassion for them. And he healed their sick. And when it was evening, his disciples came to him, saying, this is a deserted place, and the hour is already late. Send the multitudes away, that they may go into the villages and buy themselves food. But Jesus said to them, they do not need to go away. You give them something to eat. And they said to him, we have here only 5 loaves and 2 fish. He said, bring them here to me. Then he commanded the multitudes to sit down on the grass. And he took the 5 loaves and the 2 fish. And looking up to heaven, he blessed and broke and gave the loaves to the disciples. And the disciples gave to the multitudes. And so they all ate and were filled. And they took up 12 basketfuls of fragments from that remained. Now those who had eaten were about 5,000 men, besides women and children. Mark chapter 6. Begin at verse 30. Mark 6 and verse 30. Then the apostles gathered to Jesus and told him all things, both what they had done and what they had taught. This is when they were sent out. And he said to them, come aside by yourselves to a deserted place, rest for a while. There are many things coming and going, and they did not even have time to eat. And so they departed to a deserted place in a boat by themselves. But the multitude saw them departing, and many knew him, and ran there on foot from all the cities. They arrived before them, came together to him. Jesus, when he had come out, saw a great multitude, and was moved with compassion for them, because they were like sheep not having a shepherd. So he began to teach them many things. When the day was now far spent, his disciples came to him and said, this is a deserted place, and already the hour is late. Send them away that they may go into all the surrounding country and villages, and buy themselves bread, for they have nothing to eat. They answered and said to them, you give them something to eat. And they said to him, shall we go and buy 200 denarii worth of bread and give them something to eat? But he said to them, how many loaves do you have? Go and see. And when they had found out, they said, 5 and 2 fish. And he commanded them to make them all sit down in groups on the green grass. And so they sat down in ranks, in hundreds and in fifties. And when he had taken the 5 loaves and the 2 fish, he looked up to heaven, blessed and broke the loaves, gave them to his disciples, and set before them and the 2 fish. He divided among them all. So they all ate and were filled. And they took up 12 baskets full of fragments and of the fish. Now those who had eaten the loaves were about 5,000. Luke chapter 9. We get verse 10. And the apostles, when they had returned, told him all they had done. He took them and went aside privately into a deserted place belonging to the city called Bethsaida. When the multitudes knew it, they followed him, and he received them and spoke to them about the kingdom of God and healed those who had needed healing. When the day began to wear away, the 12 came and said to him, send the multitude away, that they may go into the surrounding towns and country and lodge and get provisions, for we are in a deserted place here. But he said to them, you give him something to eat. And they said, we have no more than 5 loaves and 2 fish, unless we go and buy food for all those people. For there were about 5,000 men. And he said to his disciples, make them sit down in groups of 50. And they did so, and made them all sit down. He took the 5 loaves and the 2 fish, and looking up to heaven, he blessed and broke them, and gave them to the disciples to set before the multitude. And so they all ate and were filled. The 12 baskets of the leftover fragments were taken up by them. In John chapter 6. Verse 1 beginning. John 6 and verse 1. After these things, Jesus went over to the Sea of Galilee, which is the Sea of Tiberias. A great multitude followed him because they saw his signs, which he had performed on those who were diseased. Jesus went up on the mountain, and there he sat with his disciples. And the Passover, the feast of the Jews, was near. And Jesus lifted up his eyes, and seeing a great multitude coming toward him, he said to Philip, where shall we buy bread that these may eat? But this he said to test him, for he himself knew what he would do. Philip answered him, 200 denarii worth of bread is not sufficient for them, that every one of them may have a little. One of his disciples, Andrew, Simon Peter's brother, said to him, there is a lad here who has 5 barley loaves, 2 small fish, but what are they among so many? And Jesus said, make the people sit down. Now there was much grass in the place, so the men sat down, in number of about 5,000. And Jesus took the loaves, and when he had given thanks, he distributed them to the disciples, and the disciples to those sitting down, and likewise of the fish, as much as they wanted. So when they were filled, he said to his disciples, gather up the fragments that remain, so that nothing is lost. And therefore they gathered them up, and filled 12 baskets with the fragments of the 5 barley loaves, which were left over by those who had eaten. And those men, when they had seen the sign that Jesus did, said, this is truly the prophet who has come into the world. Any comments about that section? I just need to see all 4 of those accounts. They're very similar, but different writing styles. Things that are said, not just the words that are said, but the way they're said and stated. Next, we'll get as far as we can for the walking on water. This account is in Matthew, it's in Mark, it's in John, but it is not in Luke. So the crowd, excited about the prospect of free food, became eager to force Jesus to be their king, we find out. They wanted him to be their new king after seeing this great miracle. And their bellies were full. Perceiving this, Jesus sends the disciples away in the boat. And he dismisses the crowd. Goes alone into the mountains to pray. The disciples were to go to the other side of the mountains toward Bethsaida, probably to pick up Jesus after he had crossed the mountains. But their ultimate goal is going to head down toward Capernaum. That's where they're going to ultimately. However, there's winds that are against them, and by the fourth watch, which is about 3 to 6 a.m. in the morning, they were still in the lake, and they were about 3 to 4 miles out from the shore. And the sea becomes very rough on them, and the distance meant that they couldn't turn around because it was too close to where they were going. Jesus sees his disciples' troubles, and he walks out across the lake. And he would have passed them by because of how big the storm is. But the disciples actually saw it. But they assumed it was a ghost. We see that Jesus calls out to them and says, be of good cheer. It is I. Do not be afraid. Peter, showing his rashness of character he has sometimes, immediately asks to join Jesus on the water. Jesus invites him to come. And Peter leaves the boat. And here's the basis of faith. Peter didn't attempt to leave the boat until what? Until he got a command from Jesus to do so. We know that faith comes from accepting the words of Christ. He didn't just do it. He had to have permission. Peter understood his need for authority again from Christ. At first, he's able to walk on the water, but then he starts noticing the waves. They divert his attention from Jesus, and he begins to sink. Again, Peter did not sink because he couldn't walk on the water. He could walk on the water. He made some progress toward Jesus. He started to sink because he began to doubt whether he could reach that far. We're told that when he saw that the wind was boisterous, he was afraid. Peter would not have noticed the waves if he had remained focused on Jesus, but he didn't. It was not so much that Peter was aware of the wind and the waves as that when he focused on them, he allowed his awareness of those to bring fear And that fear in turn overcame his faith. So in that moment of doubt, he forgot who was more powerful, the storm or the one who created the storm. This is why Jesus scolded Peter. He says, "Oh, you have little faith. Why did you doubt?" He's like, "Don't you realize who I am?" We tend to see the world as they immediately appeared to our senses, much like the 10 of the 12 spies in the land of Canaan. They only saw fortified cities. They saw the number of their enemies. But they forgot that God was on their side. And so they were overcome by fear. Still, Peter cried out for Jesus to save him, and Jesus did. As they climbed into the boat, the storm immediately stops, we're told. Those in the boat fell before Jesus and worshipped him, saying, "Truly, you are the Son of God." The fact that Jesus did not reject their worship shows it was proper, since God is only to be worshipped. This is another indication that Jesus was God. Matthew chapter 14. Matthew 14, verse 22. Immediately Jesus made his disciples get into the boat and go before him to the other side. And while he sent the multitudes away, when he had sent the multitude away, he went up to the mountain by himself to pray. Now when evening came, he was alone there. But the boat was now in the middle of the sea, tossed by the waves, for the wind was contrary. Now in the fourth watch of the night, Jesus went to them, walking on the sea. When the disciples saw him walking on the sea, they were troubled, saying, "It is a ghost." And they cried out for fear. But immediately Jesus spoke to them, saying, "Be of good cheer, it is I, do not be afraid." Peter answered him and said, "Lord, if it is you, command me to come to you on the water." And so he said, "Come." And when Peter had come down out of the boat, he walked on the water to go to Jesus. But when he saw that the wind was boisterous, he was afraid. And beginning to sink, he cried out, saying, "Lord, save me." And immediately Jesus stretched out his hand, caught him, and said to him, "O you of little faith, why did you doubt?" And when they got into the boat, the wind ceased. And those who were in the boat came and worshipped him, saying, "Truly you are the Son of God." Mark chapter 6. We'll be at verse 45. Immediately he made his disciples get into the boat and go before him to the other side of Bethsaida, while he sent the multitude away. And when he had sent them away, he departed to the mountain to pray. Now when evening came, the boat was in the middle of the sea, and he was alone on the land. He saw them straining at rowing, for the wind was against them. About the fourth watch of the night, he came to them walking on the sea, and would have passed them by. But when they saw him walking on the sea, they supposed it was a ghost and cried out. For they all saw him and were troubled. But immediately he talked with them and said to them, "Be of good cheer, it is I, do not be afraid." And he went up into the boat to them, and the wind ceased. And they were greatly amazed in themselves beyond measure, and marveled, for they had not understood about the loaves, because their heart was hardened. Notice no mention of Peter walking there. It's only Matthew's account. John chapter 6. Verse 15. Therefore, when Jesus perceived that they were about to come and take him by force to make him king, he departed again to the mountain by himself alone. Again, that's why he left in the first place. It wasn't his time yet. He has another year to go. Now, when evening came, his disciples went down to the sea, got to the boat, and went over the sea toward Capernaum. It was already dark, and Jesus had not come to them. The sea arose because a great wind was blowing, and so when they had rowed about 3 or 4 miles, they saw Jesus walking on the sea and drawing near the boat, and they were afraid. But he said to them, "It is I, do not be afraid." And they willingly received him into the boat, and immediately the boat was at the land where they were going. Any comments about that section? We'll stop there.